AdNews Innovation 6 podcasts are a series of interviews in which we ask thought leaders and innovators at the forefront of the marketing and communication industries 6 key questions. In this series, we examine how to maintain brand differentiation and relevance in a new environment where boundaries are constantly being redefined by consumers and new technologies.
Welcome to AdNews Innovation 6 podcasts. I'm Peter Stevenson from On Communications, and we're about to talk with Seth Godin, who is an internationally acknowledged permission marketing expert, best-selling author and industry speaker. G'day, Seth. Welcome to Australia and welcome to 6 Questions.
Well, good day to you.
Seth, obviously you're on a mobile, so you're out and about today.
Everyone in New York is in a Starbucks, and so am I.
Seth, we're here to talk about your latest book, Small is the New Big, and to find out why you believe acting small can be such a distinct advantage for companies in this consumer-controlled environment. Firstly, perhaps could you give us an overview on why acting small is now such an advantage?
Big used to mean big ad budgets, which meant you got to reach lots of people selling average stuff that average people wanted to buy. Big used to mean lots of employees, which gave you market power. Big used to mean big factories, which meant you could make stuff cheaper. Big offices, everything big, bigger, and biggest. And what happened in the last 5 or 10 years is small. Outsourcing, treating people with respect, dealing with people with permission instead of yelling at large numbers of people. All of a sudden, the consumers you want, the consumers who have money, aren't looking for the biggest and the cheapest. They're looking for someone who will act small, who will treat them like they own the place, who will bend the rules, make new policies, interact with people the way they want to be interacted with, as opposed to yelling at them.
So in essence, what people are looking for is to become more involved with the company in terms of a relationship and an understanding of the values that the company might offer.
You know, the worst thing you can have is an ad that doesn't get read. The second best thing is an impression. The third best thing is a trial. The fourth best thing is a customer. The fifth best thing is a loyal customer. But what you really need is a customer who tells her friends. And so advertising is 5 steps away from where it needs to be. It needs to get away from trying to interrupt strangers with unanticipated, personal, irrelevant junk, and instead start focusing on creating experiences and interactions that people share.
It's interesting, Seth, because we're in an age now where we're moving from the old world style interruption marketing to engagement marketing, which is probably what you're talking about in a sense. How much has this influenced your thinking?
Well, I think that having been doing this for so long, you know, my thinking has influenced it, which has influenced me. That at the beginning, I really was focusing on the permission part and going one step away from spamming people. But over time, as more people have gotten good at that, it's become clear to me that it's the viral part, the conversation part, the storytelling part, that's where the real wins are occurring.
So in essence, what you're saying is once you get the community effect going and you get the viral effect, the storytelling going, it takes on its own strength as a campaign?
Oh, yes, but you have to earn it, right? There are too many advertisers who just want it to happen, who want to take their mediocre junk and turn it into something that people talk about. But people aren't pimps. They're not going to be bought off that easily. People are going to talk to their friends because they want to, not because you want them to. And that means you have to invest in products and services and engagements that people choose to talk about.
The good thing about that, Seth, is it's keeping marketers honest in terms of you need something that has a real tangible point of difference and provides real value to people above and beyond what just a product can deliver.
Well, that's right. When I call marketers are liars, I was being facetious. You know, all real marketers are truth tellers. You're telling a story that's true, otherwise it's not going to spread.
Seth, I've read recently that you really believe that the ability these days in this new environment to be flexible and to be adaptable and change quickly is now, as you've called it, the single best asset for any company. Who do you see doing this well?
Well, you know, the people, someone like Nike comes out with a new product every 3 or 4 hours. You see the difference between a company like Gold Toe, which in the United States was the number one maker of socks, and it's nothing but flat sales, and compared to a company like Little Mismatch, has hundreds of styles of socks, none of which match, and which is growing by double digits every year. Well, it's not because they have a sock factory. It's because they figured out how to move quickly and take advantage of a fashion trend. And so in every marketplace, whether it's cell phones or funeral parlors, if you're going just a little faster than your competition, you get way more than your fair share of growth.
In a way, what that's doing is reflecting the fact these days that we are now expecting more, and perhaps what we're doing is expecting more of brands. So the brands that can deliver that will benefit in the future.
Yeah, consumers are insatiable. Yeah, we've spoiled them. We've trained them first that there will be a new car model every September. Then we train them that there will be hundreds of new car models. Then we train them that car models from all over the world will be available at your local dealer, and on and on and on and on and on. And why would we expect now that it's in our interest that consumers would suddenly get patient and want the world to slow down? They're not going to.
And increasingly what they're wanting to do is control it on their terms. So it's a matter of companies having the flexibility, to come back to your point, structurally and in their processes and thinking, to be able to get to market quicker with continual new products.
Yeah, and the thing is that most businesses think of that as a cost, when in fact it's an asset. That if you build a company that changes faster, you are using it as a tool instead of buying advertisements on the World Cup. Right? So, they're both expenses, but one of them is going to work better than the other.
So what it's about, Seth, is really having the ability to read the market and react to the market quickly.
No, I'm going to go much farther than that, and I'm going to say that marketing is no longer a silo. Marketing is throughout the organization. Marketing is about investing in a machine or a factory or a process that gets you to market faster. It's about changing from having a drill press to having a laser cutter for $1 million, because it will allow the factory to change its dies faster. So you can have 4 cycles a year instead of 2. No one used to think of that as marketing, but that's exactly what it is.
So people need to redefine marketing within their organizations.
Right. If someone hands you an average product and says, here's some money, go market it to average people, you need to hand it back to them and refuse.
Or alternatively, you could go to the casino.
Or you could go to the casino.
Seth, in your book, you talk about brands needing to make a change from what I call the old world, but the monologue approach, to the new dialogue approach. What's this all about? Why is this important?
Well, you know, I don't think that marketing is a conversation. I think that markets are conversations between prospects and consumers and companies. But marketing is the act of telling a story. That what you have to understand that you do as a marketer is you craft a story that people want to tell to each other and respond to each other. If you don't have a story, if all you have is facts, figures, bullet points, and a PowerPoint, then you don't have marketing anymore.
Today, Seth, there's lots of new ways for consumers to interact and tell stories. We've got podcasts, vodcasts, chat rooms, blogs.
Yeah, you know, you have to remember that not everyone's a blogger and not everyone's on the cutting edge. And Walmart, the guys at Walmart pointed out to me a couple years ago that 33% of their customers at that time didn't live in a zip code that had modem access to the Internet, never mind high speed. And so Walmart needs to remind itself, and they do, that while these principles are valid, satisfying the bleeding edge of the blogosphere isn't necessarily the most important thing on their agenda.
Because that might not represent the mass segment of their business.
Exactly. It's the leading edge. It's going to tell them what's going to happen to them in 2 years. But there's companies out there that are experimenting, like Walmart, good for them. But all the companies that aren't experimenting and aren't getting spanked, they're the ones that are really in trouble because they're not learning anything.
Talk to us about that, Seth. We meet with a lot of companies here in the work we do, and we say to them, put a toe in the water, give it a go, have a try. And there's the people who get it, and then there's a big fear of failure and people who are in the old paradigm of thinking. What do you see over there?
Well, you know, the question is, what would Giorgio do? You know, Giorgio Armani understands he's in the fashion business. And when he comes out with a new model, a new look, a new suit, he knows that if it fails, it's not going to kill him. Because he's organized his company around being fashionable, about trying lots of things and seeing what happens. If you compare that to a company in the United States like, say, Western Union, that has to get it perfect, or they don't do it, you can see a company that's failing. And so if you want to survive in a high-change world, you have to embrace the fact that you have to change and that you have to be in the fashion business.
And basically, you have to be prepared to go for it with that confidence of understanding that it is on a trial basis and it is a learning curve, but at least be in the game and having a go.
It's much cheaper to fail with a cheap new product than it is to fail with a big campaign that's in all media all the time. You can't keep getting those right. They're going to bite you. Whereas if you can keep the habit of doing lots of little experiments, Nike style or Starbucks style, then you're going to come out ahead.
And what interestingly happens with that is it gives the brand an edge. It gives it a bit of currency in the marketplace. So it does resonate or ripple through the market in different ways.
Because average people don't want to hear from you. The only people who want to hear from you are the ones on the edges, the ones who are interested. You have to talk to them in a language that they're interested in.
Seth, on a different tack, can you share your thinking with us on the importance of authenticity for brands?
Well, you got to remember that the Internet and today's culture is 360 degrees. You can't go out and say one thing and do something else because you're going to get caught. And when you get caught, people will never forgive you. So what authentic means is telling the truth, telling a story that holds up to scrutiny. And it doesn't matter what the story is, as long as it holds up, as long as it's authentically who you are and what you're about. If you say to the world, we have friendly service, but you don't hire friendly people, then it doesn't matter what the marketing people made up. If the people aren't keeping the promise, you got nothing. And that's what being authentic is. It's everyone in the company listening to the story and living the story.
And I think the important thing, too, is for them to be able to understand the power of that story within the market.
Right, and most stories have no power in the market because they're not true, so they don't spread and they don't resonate, and that's the end of that.
Hey, we keep coming back to that one simple principle, don't we?
You got it.
Seth, there's an in your book, Small is the New Big, you talk about the explosion of micro-brands. We've been seeing this for a number of years. What do you think's driving this trend? Again, is it what we've just been talking about?
Well, it's also the long tail. It's also cheaper than ever to carry 10,000 SKUs. So, you know, I don't care that the shoes I'm wearing aren't available at my local store because they're on my local website. And we know from, you know, all the examples in Chris's book that the long tail pays off, that in every market, as you expand the number of choices, the size of the market gets bigger. And there's no reason for the retailer online to want there to be fewer choices. We're going to see more and more and more. Like right now I'm wearing corduroys that go horizontally, made by a company called Quarter Rounds. And as far as I know, there's very few stores you can buy them in, but they're easy to buy on the net. And so more and more people are going to start wearing horizontal corduroys.
So what it's allowing people to do through micro brands is really get a close association with the new products or new brands and buy specifically what really suits them.
Exactly, and they get treated by respect. With respect, I mean, I got an email from the owner of the clothing company because I mentioned it on my blog. Well, I could mention Levi's all day on my blog, and I'm never going to get it from the CEO of Levi's.
Exactly. So what that means is that person's understanding the opportunity that's presented by that, and then they're taking advantage of that.
And they're acting small.
Seth, many of the multinational companies and brands out here in Australia they're tied into well-defined and orthodox marketing processes that have evolved over years. Their structures sometimes can inhibit their ability to compete effectively against small companies. What are you guys seeing in the US?
Well, you know, some companies are able to do it, and other companies become a hollow shell until they collapse. And I don't know how to tell the difference until it happens. Because, you know, it's important to remember the Fortune 500, most of those companies are bigger than Australia in terms of their GDP. And that's a big boat to turn really fast. And so some of them are going to pull it off, and others are just going to coast until they hit a rock, and then they're going to sink.
It's going to be an interesting future, Seth. There's no doubt about that. Just finally, Seth, with the changes that we're seeing in this consumer-controlled environment and the way that, you know, marketers need to sort of hand a sense of control and brand ownership to consumers, how far do you think this can go in the future?
Every single time I think we're hitting the limit, I'm proven wrong. So I don't want to say where the limit is. I don't know where it is. I think it's pretty far. You know, the compelling thing about Apple Computer is there really is a Steve Jobs, and he really is a dictator, and he really is doing everything himself. And that's one of the reasons the place fascinates us, because it's a multi-billion dollar company that acts like it's run with three people.
Yeah. So in essence, it's with Apple, what Steve Jobs is doing true leadership, but he's thinking small.
That's exactly right.
Mate, thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate it. There's a lot of thought-provoking stuff in what we've just talked about.
My pleasure, and I want to thank you for getting up so early in the morning.
Hey, it's not that early over here. Seth, we really enjoyed reading your book, Small is the New Big, and we look forward to talking with you again in the future. Thanks for your time today, and we'll see you again.
It's my pleasure. There's all sorts of free stuff from the book if you go to www.smalliz.com.
Thanks, Seth. That's been fantastic.
Okay, cheers.
See you, mate.
This AdNews Innovation 6 podcast is an initiative from Advertising News, On Communications and Stellar Sound. AdNews is Australia's top-selling advertising, marketing and media magazine.